Hey, America.
Start listening.
Now.
Right now.
All right. Hey, guys, I have really exciting news.
Ooh.
Yeah, I have been given an exclusive envelope with the name of next year's Eurovision host city. Are you ready?
Ooh. Yeah, do tell.
It.
We are go. Wait, guys, this says Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Aww.
Again?
And welcome to yet another cheese packing episode of 12 Points from America, the closest Eurovision podcast to Green Bay, Wisconsin. I'm Eric.
I'm Derek.
I'm Samantha.
And I'm Liz.
It's true. We are the closest to Green Bay, I think.
I think.
If that is one thing we can claim we are the best at, is being near Green Bay. Have you ever been to Green Bay?
I have not, actually. Yeah. My Wisconsin travels have been mostly Madison focused.
Sure.
And the Dells, for better or for worse.
Yeah, no, I haven't been to Green Bay either.
I went there once for a concert at a small venue. That was the only time. The thing they are known for is the American football team. I swear that the half of the town is just that stadium. It's very big. I drove by the stadium. That's about all I have to say about the place.
Drove by the stadium, took an hour and a half.
Yeah. I mean, what else? If listeners in Wisconsin, tell us what else is worth seeing up there, and I'll pretend that I will go do it later.
It's really not that far from us. As when it comes to American travel, like our standards, I know, are compared to Europeans, are a little bit screwy. Like, how long of a drive would it be from us to Green Bay? Maybe, what's 6 hours?
Let's take a look.
I would guess 6, yeah.
I happen to have Google
Maps. 4.5
to
Madison.
Yeah, and then you have to, you know, make a...
4.5.
4.5. Oh, huh. Okay. Well, yeah, that's just a jaunt.
Yeah,
that's just down the road.
I love telling Europeans that. I think we touch on this recently, where we talk about how, like, oh, Chicago's just a 6-hour drive, and they look at us like,
why?
Are you insane? Why would you drive for 6 hours?
Because public transportation, because our train system is really, really limited.
Mm-hmm. We do have a train that goes from here to Chicago, to be fair.
Twice a day.
Yeah.
I've been on it.
Yeah, I have also been on it.
Same.
It's
just kind of lulls you to sleep.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun, but what my dad likes to say about trains is it takes as long as driving and costs as much as flying.
In this
country, that's true. Yeah, I miss Thales trains very much.
Oh, the bougie trains.
I miss Thales the Shinkansen.
Yeah, I bet.
We almost had one.
We can't have nice things.
We really can't.
Trains, reflecting pools. What else can't we have? Healthcare.
Yeah. Education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People who trust in science. But we have each other.
Yeah, we have each other, and we have World Wrestling Entertainment, and that's about it.
Yeah, SummerSlam was here this past weekend.
I looked, the Bangaranga guy wasn't here, which is a bummer. I think he might have gotten hurt.
Oh,
like legitimately hurt.
Applied to him, like
bangaranged
up.
Oh no,
he got bangaranged. It reversed on him.
Oh no,
I don't know.
Did somebody pull an Uno reverse on Bangaranga guy? Like, oh no.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, we should talk about Eurovision if we can.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say something else that we do have is way too many social media outlets. And you can find us if you want to get in touch with us on basically any of them. Just search for us at 12pointsUSA. Just email us directly, 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. Find our merchandise on Redbubble. You can support us at the one-off donation on our Ko-fi account. It's ko-fi. Or a sustained monthly donation on Patreon. And whether you support us financially or not, we love and appreciate and see you either way. But Patreon supporters do get exclusive content and early access to episodes. And then when it comes to Eurovision news, like we were expecting to have a host city officially named by now. They said that they still have a couple more hoops to jump through and some more questions that need to be answered. I'm assuming it'll probably be available by mid-August, but
it's going to be tomorrow. It will.
That's just how we work here. That's what happens when we, you know, record on Mondays and release on Fridays, if not earlier for Patreon.
Well, yeah, if you're a patron, it's not Fridays. it's before that.
It's whenever you guys get it done.
Yeah, yeah. Usually Wednesdays is when I like to do it if we can. So
nice.
So check that out. Give us some money, like Manisha said in her newer song.
Yeah,
it's really good. Goes insane. All right.
So what's in the news? What do we got for news? News.
Asia. I think Asia's up to something.
Yeah, it looks like we're gonna have. Let's see. We're recording this on August 3rd, so by the time our next episode goes out, we may have our first official song and or at least act for ESC Asia from our dear friends at Bhutan.
Man.
Yeah, they're picking on August 11th. So yeah, this is happening, y'all. Druk Draw is finally coming to fruition.
So what country in Europe do you think is going to be the, is Bhutan going to be like the Eurovision Asia equivalent?
Part of me hopes that they're kind of like Georgia in the fact that they're kind of doing their own thing. But we'll find out when the songs really hit. But like Bhutan is really kind of its own special place.
Mm-hmm. See, that's why I was kind of thinking Iceland.
I could see
they're also
too.
They're both very happy places as well. They're both filled with mythical creatures, elves and dragons. And I don't know. It makes sense to me.
South Korea is just Sweden, right?
No.
I think so.
Yeah, probably.
In the traditional sense.
Yeah, we added a couple countries though, didn't we? In the last couple weeks, the field is already expanding.
That is true. Let's see. Right now, as of this specific moment, we are at 10. There are rumors floating around of a couple more, but again,
is that not official?
It's not official.
Oh,
yeah. So we should actually probably not talk about this.
Why?
Well, it's on Twitter.
I mean,
everything on Twitter is true.
I mean,
we could talk about.
We could talk about rumors.
Talk about rumors.
Okay, yeah, we could talk about rumors floating around that possibly, maybe Mongolia and I can't believe we're saying this, but China might be joining, which is a big deal.
Can you imagine a Eurovision like flag parade on the level of the Chinese, the Beijing Olympic opening ceremony?
It's gonna be crazy.
Some big ass drums.
Yeah. Also, have any of you heard of a band, the Mongolian group, The Who?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Is that just spelled H-U?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, The Who. I mean, it's basically a mix of metal and traditional Mongolian music, and it's
neat.
It's sweet.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
Yeah, I'd like Mongolia to be the Finland of.
Yeah. Ooh. Yes. Yeah. Where do I sign for that?
Yeah. So. Let's make that that rumor come true, just like we talked about the moon. Speaking of which, I can't believe this. I have to make another correction about the moon's participation in Eurovision, sort of.
Say more.
I'm so annoyed about this. So when 2020 got canceled, there were a handful of these like substitute contests. That people came up with. And one of the ones that actually had any legs at all, albeit briefly, was the Free European Song Contest.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know where this is going.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, Stefan Raab executive produced it. Conchita was one of the presenters.
Mm-hmm.
And
Sarah Engels performed for Italy, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is true. We also had Ilse de Lange in there. Switzerland sent Stephanie Heinzmann, who's an act I really like and would really love to see at Eurovision at some point. But there was also a representative from the moon called Der Astronaut with the song Back to the Moon. They finished third.
The thing is, if I remember correctly, like that the astronaut was basically the guy who played the astronaut in Masked Singer Germany, who was Mats Mutzke.
Yeah.
Who did Waiting for Tonight for Germany a couple of years ago. So, yeah.
That is correct.
Yeah, we missed out on that connection. Sorry about that.
All right. Yeah, if there are any others, let me know. But just be aware, I don't care. And I will be offering no further corrections about the moon unless something new happens. But that's not a correction. So, whatever. All right.
Right.
In other news, we mentioned, I think, in our last episode that the OGAE Second Chance nominations for that contest are out. I think we're going to talk about that in a future episode, just because we needed a little bit more time to kind of process the list and come up with our favorites. But yeah, those are out if you want to listen back to some fan favorites from earlier in the season that didn't quite make it to the big show.
I was looking at the list and saw Dara, and for a brief moment I was like,
wait a minute.
Oh, she's great. I wonder. Oh, I remember now.
Yeah.
One artist, three songs.
Yeah. It was an all Dara final. I'm imagining a split screen. Just Dara.
So many Daras.
Yeah. So all right. That brings us to our main topic, I think. Or did I miss something?
No. It's quiet season. There's not a ton going on. So we figured we'd kind of look back a little bit. And Eric, I think you were the one who kind of came up with this topic.
Yeah, this one was my suggestion. So as a big stupid music nerd, I'm a big fan of Todd in the Shadows, which is a YouTube channel that covers a number of things, a series on like albums that ruin artists' careers, things like that, called Train Records, which is always really good. We'll do pop song reviews. We'll do countdowns of the worst songs of the year, which are always hilarious. And he's been doing that for 15 plus years now. But another one is called One Hit Wonderland, which talks about artists known for one song, usually. That's the idea, anyway. And he, about a week ago, released a new video on Walking on Sunshine.
Hey!
By Katrina and the Waves. Now, listeners of this show, and a lot of listeners in the UK and Europe and so on, will know they're kind of known for two songs, and the other is the one that we're going to talk about today. Although, I will say, Walking on Sunshine, it's pretty good.
It's a banger.
It is the happiest song there is, I think. Todd called it, I think, twice as happy as Pharrell's Happy.
It's pretty happy.
I mean, I'm going to say Earth, Wind, and Fire September gives it a run for its money. When it comes to like pure joy encapsulated in a song, maybe happy joy joy from the Ren and Stimpy show, but that's again very very niche and very millennial.
Well, as long as you don't listen to the spoken word portions, those are a little less happy. I feel
Stinky Whistleteats kind of went off the deep end on that side. Yeah,
poor guy.
I'm sorry. Yeah. What?
You don't know Stinky Whistleteats?
No, I know Ren and Stimpy, sort of.
Well, I guess we're gonna have to.
Guess our eating plans are sorted.
That. Yeah.
Yep. Looks like Liz is gonna have some Ren and Stimpy foisted on her in the after show.
Yeah, that'll be good. Maybe we can make that a Patreon exclusive, perhaps. Anyway, the video is very good. And check out Todd in the Shadows generally, but he talked about, you know, did they ever get a second hit? And they talked about it, you know, subsequent things that happened in the 12 years between Walking on Sunshine, which is 1985, to Love Shine a Light, 97. And it's just repeated, no, this didn't work, this didn't work, this didn't work. But then they showed up at Eurovision and they won.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it may be unsurprising to those of you who have watched any Todd content, Todd Tent, if you will. He's not a fan of Love Shine a Light. It just finds it very... very corny. And I think everyone understands, like, I think even the people who like it understand that it's corny. Let's start with that. How do you feel about this song just generally?
It's syrupy, sweet, positive, uplifting in a way that sort of that late 90s, you know, the people who would love a show Touched by an Angel would probably love Love Shine a Light. It's that big uplifting, we're all in this together. Is it what I normally would listen to? No. Do I get why it won? Yeah, I think I do.
I have a thought on this, which is, if you could distill the phrase united by music.
Yes.
Oh, good.
And make it a song. I think Love Shine a Light is what would come out of the AI machine. I feel like this is the exact type of song that should be used in an end of Olympics montage. Like, think of like that Whitney Houston song, One Moment in Time.
Or like One Shining Moment after the Final Four.
It's one of those songs, right? Like, I think, like you said, it's not, we understand that this is not, that maybe this song doesn't stand the test of time in terms of quality? I don't know if quality is the right word. Style, perhaps?
I don't know if quality is the right word. That's That's going to be the title of my autobiography. Put that on my tombstone.
No, I agree with Sam. Like, I can see why it won.
I can't, but...
You can't?
There's definitely something very movie soundtrack about it, that it feels a bit simplistic, but it would play over a scene of, you know, people hugging and being happy. Like, think of the opening scene in Love Actually or something.
Yeah.
Comes to mind.
It just kind of has that feeling like it's so on the nose for what you're looking at visually. And yet it doesn't have that association. And let's be honest, it was the 90s. We all went through a Christian rock phase.
Speak for yourself.
Certainly did not.
I'm still in mine.
Oh, no.
I mean,
Flood by Jars of Clay was a good song.
Yeah.
That was kind of...
I mean, this it's 97. That's the year Jars of Clay is Much Afraid came out, which is the best
album. Okay. All right. Yeah. So you're not wrong.
Yes. I will shut the hell up and Derek should continue.
Sorry. Go on, Derek.
I mean, I've always known about this song, and I guess I've never really sat down and listened to it and thought about it the way was needed for this show. And kind of knowing that, it feels very much a product of its time, but even of the time, was this what Europe was into? Or did this just kind of hit people just right at the moment?
I can provide some further context on what Europe was into at the moment, because I took the liberty of pulling up the Eurochart Hot 100 singles for 1997.
Ooh. Thanks, Liz.
You're welcome. To no one's surprise, the number one Eurochart Hot 100 single of 1997 was Elton John's Candle in the Wind, 1997.
Oh, yeah.
Which, of course, was October of that year and well after Eurovision. But we have such classics as Puff Daddy, Faith Evans' I'll Be Missing You, No Doubt, Don't Speak, Aqua's Barbie Girl, Will Smith's Men in Black, Toni Braxton's Unbreak My Heart. We have Sarah Brightman and Andrea Bocelli with Time to Say Goodbye. Mm.
Is Gina G on there?
Not in the top 20.
Oh.
I mean, Gina G came out in 96.
Well, I know. I'm just saying, I just feel like...
Was it still on the charts?
Staying power on that one.
It crossed over here.
Did not stick around into the 1997 chart.
Fine.
Shame.
So... Where Katrina and the Waves landed on this top 100 was 64th.
Huh.
So...
It wasn't not what they were into, I guess. I mean, the other thing is, this is an era where quite possibly the most critical thing you can do to win Eurovision is to sing in English.
And they did.
This
is still a time when, you know, the language rule was still very much in place. We are just coming off of Ireland's power streak, which could also probably be partially credited / blamed on the fact that people understood English a little bit more easily.
Yeah, they had won 4 of the last 5 times.
It's insane. It's still, it's an obvious, you know, it's a well-known chestnut in Eurovision fandom, but it still absolutely floors me.
It's wild to think about now, like if that were to happen now, you know, and we had Twitter and all that, that like... Mm-hmm. Oh, God. The fandom would be inconsolable, I feel like.
And we're still in the era here of live orchestra, but backing tracks are also allowed, which is interesting. And I don't know to what extent Love Shine a Light utilized that orchestra, but it seems like they could have with some of the horn backing and such.
This was not entirely jury vote.
No, this was one of the first times that they were really starting to kind of dabble with the idea of introducing a public vote. And really only a couple of countries were playing with that, which I've talked about one of my favorite songs of all time at Eurovision in Hinsti Dans, which was the Icelandic song, getting a little bit more love from the public vote as opposed to the juries who may have been looking for something different. And they loved Katrina.
I did look at the jury composition from that year from the rules, because why not? 16 person juries at that point, it appears, must be even.
Whoa.
Yeah, even gender divide, 8 men, 8 women, 8 jurors under 30, 8 over 30.
Wow.
Each what national jury composed 50% of persons able to demonstrate their interest in popular music and representative of the public of their country, and 50% of professionals, which can include composers, authors, singers, musicians, conductors, journalists in the light music sphere, or radio TV producers. But only 2 of them may be connected with a record company or music publisher, which is a big jury.
That's a huge jury.
I'm annoyed as hell that this isn't just what it is now.
Right. Yeah. Like, bring that back.
That sounds perfect.
Yeah.
That's Martin. Now I'm mad.
They were also allowed a comprehensive drum kit that was provided by the host country. Ooh. No private drum kits allowed, in case you were wondering.
Ooh.
That's sensible, though. Like, if you're concerned about miking and sound checking and stuff between acts, having exactly one drum kit solves a big part of the problem. Yep. There.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to plug in or swap out a guitar or a bass, right, or something like that, or a keyboard, but a drum set is a bit more involved.
Yeah. For an arena size show, there are, I don't even know, a dozen mics on a drum kit sometimes. Mm. It depends on the kit, I suppose. Like, yeah. Meg White probably didn't have quite as many. Now, at 97, this was pioneering year in a couple other ways. We had the first LGBT, openly LGBT. Openly.
Yep.
Yes. Act from Iceland. It was also the first year of everyone's favorite, the Barbara Dex Award.
Yeah, that was the first year of the, well, now no longer a going concern, Barbara Dex Award for the, at the time, worst outfit. Then it kind of morphed into most memorable outfit. But yeah, Malta's Debbie Sherry with Let Me Fly. I remember it was sort of a stripy maxi dress that was not the most flattering.
You don't say.
Yeah. I mean, you'd think, you know, maxi dresses, vertical stripes kind of elongates the... No, it just didn't quite work. Sorry, Debbie. Sure, you're a lovely person.
It's all good. All good.
But, you know, she came in 9th place overall that year, which for Malta is pretty darn solid. So, good honor. Mm-hmm.
So, one of the things that really surprised me about when I was kind of learning about this song, and this actually goes back to the Todd in the Shadows video. This is a quote that he highlighted from Katrina. That I will note, I have no reason to believe this was made up or anything like that, but I will also note I could not find this interview, so I don't have the full context of it. But there was one where Katrina was asked basically, you know, were you feeling confident in your chance to win? Okay. And this is what she said. We were very confident. Being around other Eurovision people and the songs is like when your dog takes a poop in the corner of the living room. Oh my God, what is that stench? But little by little, you get used to it.
Wow. I
hadn't heard that one before.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, oh, so she has to just hate Eurovision now and just want nothing to do with it, like Celine or any number of others. But that's not really true, is it? Because we've seen her pop up a number of times since, including very notably in 2020, when we did Europe Shine a Light. I just got that. Love Shine a Light shows up twice in that special, in fact. Once being performed by the Rotterdam Philharmonic, and then at the end being performed by every 2020 act except Hoover Phonic. Never change Hoover Phonic.
They were between singers.
Yeah.
I like to imagine they were like, what, that song? No. Just no. And then at the very end by appearance by Katrina herself.
Yeah. A very cute little poodle.
Yes, she has a cute dog. We're supposed to note that as well. she did 6 years ago. Hopefully she still does. We'll have to look into that. But I mean, it seems like she has maybe a complicated relationship with the whole thing. And I think maybe part of that is that, you know, they were a more guitar heavy group in the 80s, at a time when guitars were not the new hit thing. It was all about keyboards generally. And this song pushed them into another, a whole other bubble, basically. Mm. After they won, she also said, talking about how it got them touring in parts of Europe they wouldn't have otherwise gone to. She said, I don't know if we all thought about that. I thought the whole Eurovision lark would paper over the cracks for a while. But after the win, we ended up playing the most glamorous rock and roll locations in the world. Bosnia, Croatia, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Moldavia. Are you with me? And it just got to the point where we were like, what the hell? Which seems like an oddly almost resentful
comment.
That the way that it changed their trajectory, you know. I'll also note, the song was written by their guitar player, who declined to be on stage for the performance. It's somebody else.
And it wasn't sort of the situation where it was, oh, there are too many members of the band, we have to jettison somebody. He was like, nope, I'm not gonna do it.
He was not interested in quote unquote participating.
Sir, not a peerie in this contest.
Yeah.
So they got another gospel singer up, so that's fine.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah. And then the group had been together this entire time. They just weren't able to really string any other hits together or anything like that. But they broke up by the end of the 90s. And it seems like it's in part because this attempt at Eurovision kind of changed their trajectory in a way where they weren't happy anymore. And obviously Katrina's come back in some context and things like that. I guess I can understand why it would be a sort of a complicated relationship with the contest.
I can absolutely see a Eurovision win ending up as sort of a mixed blessing and kind of an albatross around your neck. It's, you know, it's amazing in the moment knowing, you know, so many people were voting for you and potential commercial success, but you then have to wear the mantle of Eurovision champion for the rest of your career. And you can lean into that, or it could just be a something that doesn't fit you after a certain point. And, you know, we see acts like Lordi who, you know, Hard Rock Hallelujah, that's what they were about. But if they had won Eurovision with a song that wasn't them and they were trawled out to sing the song over and over again, when it was really them, then it feels like a shoe that's not quite fitting and it can get uncomfortable. And especially when it's a band setup and you have to deal with all these different personalities, I could see how it could weigh on an artist. You know, am I stuck in this expected bubble, or do I move on? And that's something that I think any artist would have to kind of reckon with.
Something that a lot of it kind of made me wonder is like, well, if that's how you feel about the song and about the trajectory it ended up giving you, why did you do this?
You might not have expected me to go this far.
Well, yeah, I mean, probably not. It sounds like someone at their label or at the BBC was a big fan and just kind of wanted to encourage them to do it. And they happened to have this song, Love Shine a Light, kind of in the back pocket, but they never put it on an album. They never recorded it because they literally thought it was too Eurovision-y, that it was too corny. But when they were asked,
they were
like,
right.
Like, hey, we would love you to try out for the national final we have this year. Do you have anything? And they'd be like, actually, we have something that's perfect. And they were right about that because it was a landslide win. In terms of possible points, it's one of the biggest winners of all time. People just really, really took to it. Another thing I saw Katrina note, and this was an interview just a few years ago, talking about how, and this really tracks, I feel like, when I think about the UK's attitude generally toward Eurovision, that there had been a lot of hope that with the victory, it would mean, you know, a whole new round of opportunities in the UK. And that ended up not being the case either. She noted part of the reason for that was that earlier that week, the week of Eurovision 1997, Tony Blair was elected prime minister.
Yeah.
And the country was very, very excited about that, to the point where it wasn't a great time to win Eurovision for them because it would end up, it was going to inevitably become an afterthought. And that's basically what happened.
Damn you, Tony Blair.
Take that. Yeah, Tony Blair, you jackass. He probably doesn't listen to this show.
I'm assuming not.
Yeah.
If you are, hi Tony.
Yeah.
How you doing? How about those local sports teams? Anyway. Yeah. 1997. Yeah, spring summer of 1997 must have been a really wild time in the UK. I mean, between New Labour taking over, winning Eurovision, Princess Diana's car crash. I feel like there was a bit of a maelstrom of all sorts of really interesting news going around that time.
Well, to be fair, Princess Diana was killed in Paris, not England. So
true, fair.
Dodged a bullet there.
Ooh.
Was this, I mean, kind of going back to the song then really quick, in this world of 1997, from an English perspective, was this like, is this the music of England specifically? Is this the kind of thing I guess I'm trying to wrap my head around how, oh, we got the perfect song for this and it wins. And it, I can't imagine somebody would look at this and think, oh yeah, this is winner written all over it.
I mean, it was big. It was anthemic. It was in English. It was a somewhat recognizable performer. It's like, oh, it's the Walking on Sunshine folks. Cause that was a massive hit.
That was, yeah. Still play to this day.
Oh yeah. Like any uplifting movie montage.
Yeah, like that scene where Patrick Bateman goes to work. I'm curious if this, because you mentioned Lordy. I mean, Lordy won in big part because it was so different. It was just it like against a sea of very samey kind of ballads. Mm. Here comes this weird rock song that's like nothing else we've ever seen before. And I think people were ready for something different. What was the rest of the, I can't remember what the rest of the field was like that year.
There were some great ones. I mean, there was, you know, quite a few another, you know, more big emotional ballads. Ireland in second place with Mysterious Woman was, you know, not too dissimilar in terms of tone. Fiumi di Parole in fourth place from Italy. Amazing song if you don't know that one. Also similar kind of time signature, similar kind of vibe, more brokenhearted. There were a lot of songs that I think could have fit into the same part of the ecosystem. Let's see. Ale Jestem by Poland, also very similar. I mean, really, the ones that were truly different were songs like Iceland's Min Hinsti Dans that we've brought up like three times this year already. There were a lot of sort of mid-tempo, comfortable songs that didn't really break much of the mold. And part of me wonders if we're comparing this to Lordy with the fact that this is still a very jury-heavy selection process, as opposed to 2006, where the public vote took a lot more energy.
I mean, it's a pleasant song. I would not say it broke any molds exactly.
Right.
Which is interesting because, I mean, it's a bit of a change of pace from the Irish songs that had been winning. But we're not talking Whiplash here.
No.
Like how an Iceland win maybe would have been. And I would say they came close because they finished second. But in terms of numbers, no one was particularly close to this. I was just curious what like the UK number ones were leading up to Eurovision 1997. And I wish I hadn't.
I know. I looked at this too.
So this bit didn't work out. Here's what happened. Okay. I'm just going to give you the replay. I'll be like, okay. Oh, there was a song that was number one for a bunch of April. What was it? It was I Believe I Can Fly by RK.
Oh no.
And I thought, oh, okay, well let's just look at the next one. And it was Blood on the Dance Floor by Michael Jackson. And I thought, come on, like, okay. I will note though that there are a couple of number ones from 97 that are near and dear to my heart as long as I'm rambling about nothing. Your Woman by Whitetown.
Ooh, underrated. That year. Absolutely. I love that one.
There's a great Todd in the Shadows video about that song, by the way. Ooh. That song is so ahead of its time now. Like if you listen to it now and listen to like the music that gets made now and how it's made, because that song was made in a dude's bedroom. Ooh. Like before Billie Eilish was even conceived. And anyway, do you recall, I don't know why you would, but what came ever so close to Christmas number one that year? It was number one the 2 weeks before Christmas. I'll just tell you. It's Teletubbies.
It wasn't Mr. Blobby.
No.
Okay,
no.
That's better than the Mr. Blobby guess that I was going to guess.
Mr. Blobby was in the 90s, but I think it was earlier in the decade, I think. But that was number one. that did rank number one. In the UK.
You've glossed right over the song I would like to be resuscitated to if I need CPR, which is Mbop by Hanson.
Yep, that one did real well as well. The Drugs Don't Work by The Verve. Do You Know What I Mean by Oasis was number one that year. One of my really spicy European music hot takes, this isn't Eurovision specifically, obviously, but it's that Oasis's Be Here Now is great, that it's legitimately underrated. Because everybody likes to hate on it now. I'm not saying it's not overproduced and too long. It is both of those things. I also think that it's great. Commenters, come get me.
Or buy your Eric Was Wrong t-shirts on Redbubble.
There we go. No. Be Here Now slaps. Anyway. Oh, Block Rock and Beats hit number one that year too.
Ooh. I mean, 97 was just, it's just a damn good year.
It's a good year. Really good.
And then
year.
Probably ended Celine Dion, My Heart Will Go On every single chart ever. But that was, you know, end of the year.
Not on the UK charts, at least really? Not in the calendar year of 1997.
Okay.
Looks like My Heart Will Go On did make number one, but it was not until February of 98.
And then again in March.
Yeah. It knocked off Dr. Jones by Aqua. Okay. Oh, they performed at Eurovision once. Well,
I do enjoy doing these deep dives on songs like this. Not every song has the history and the lore that, say, a Love Shine a Light or a Amar Pelashtoy, she can almost say, or so many of these songs. Not necessarily all of them have the kind of lore, but if you have any recommendations, you as a listener have any recommendations for songs that you want us to do kind of a deep dive on that have that lore, just let us know. Yeah, you know how to reach us, 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com or 12pointsUSA at basically all the social medias.
Do you know the first time I heard this song?
Love Shine a Light. Was it earlier today?
No, oh, it was good. Not. No, but it was with you.
Oh, I think I know.
Yeah, what was it?
Well, we should give Sam and Derek a chance to guess.
Was it in Turin as you were waiting for a Eurovision thing to start happening?
It was not.
No, it was before that, I believe.
It was.
Derek, what do you think?
Well, I've been stalking you guys, so just give me a second to go through these photos. And
cool.
Awesome.
I'm assuming the 2020 Eurovision Love Shine a Light show was not the option.
No, I believe
we had not yet officially met at that point.
Yeah, we hadn't met.
Yeah, I'm trying to get a timeline here.
I believe it was in 2021.
At some point?
No. I'll give a hint, it was not in this country.
Yeah, it was in Europe.
Was it on your honeymoon?
No. Was it, I'll just ask you, my dear, was it on a boat?
It was on a boat.
Okay, yeah, so it was in Amsterdam. We did a boat tour that the guy really liked to like set to different parts of it to music and things like that.
It was for the Amsterdam Light Festival.
Yeah, there were a bunch of
right before the holidays. We were on our way. We had just stopped in Amsterdam on our way to Paris for Junior.
Yep.
And so we were doing this boat tour around the Amsterdam Light Festival.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
And for part of it, he put on Love Shine a Light, and I had to explain, honey, this is a really corny song from Eurovision, but it won. And also it's by the Walking on Sunshine lady. And she was like, wow, I'm going to marry this guy.
That's what did it. That's what sealed it.
In five years.
four kind years. Of on defense before that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what did it for me.
Wow, he's so smart. He knows about Katrina and the waves. No, that was a fun boat tour. That was also right before I got the biggest bruise I've ever had. Or right after, I should say. Yeah. So, you know, like the concrete, like...
Bollards
that they have.
Bollards, yep.
Yeah.
Sorry, but I love the word bollard. It's really stupid.
Would you say it's your favorite word?
No, my favorite word is ramekin.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we went over
ramekin.
That. Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to doo-doo, by the way. Anyway.
You were saying?
No, we were trying to find like the meetup point for the boat thing. And at one point, I thought we were running out of time, and I panicked slightly, and I needed to turn around. So I turned around on this street along a canal in Amsterdam and ran basically legs first right into one of these things at like full speed. I went down and oh man,
it was an exquisite hematoma.
Leg was it was crazy. I don't know why I didn't take a picture of it so I could share it with all of you. But anyway, that trip was really nice. Yeah.
About 20 minutes after I found out that my bank had shut off my ATM card without telling me to.
Mm-hmm.
That was great. It's a good trip.
It really was a good trip, though, honestly.
Yeah.
Shout out to Boats, friend of the show.
I do like a good boat.
Yeah. And to Amsterdam, also friend of the show.
Yeah. The entire city of Amsterdam.
Shout out Jan Vermeer. Yeah. All right.
I think we're kind of missing another little tidbit about this song.
Say more.
I mean, of course, this is the UK's last victory, but it's also an American win.
It is.
Oh, that's right.
She's from Kansas.
She's from Kansas, of all places. Yes.
Air Force brat.
Yeah, she was. Yeah, she kind of bounced around. Yes, bounced around quite a while. Born in Topeka, arrived in the UK in 76, and just kind of bounced around. So we can claim her.
Was that our first American win?
I believe so. As far as I know, yes. There's been a Canadian winner. There have been, you know, but I believe so far she is our first and I believe only American winner. There have been other Americans who've done well, but she's ours. So
Equinox was like half American, wasn't it?
Two fifths.
Fair.
Okay. Yeah, I guess you can't do 50-50.
No, split. Not an odd number.
No.
Well, unless one of them is half American. Ethnic. Yes.
Yeah, I suppose. Well, let's get another one, shall we?
Yeah.
And if not, we'll take a Canadian.
Yes, another Canadian would also be just fine.
Ah.
Good enough.
Have we squeezed all of the light out of this song that we can possibly shine?
Squeeze all the life out of the... oh, no, I actually had one other thing. So you know how sometimes I'm so sorry, Derek. You know how like sometimes your brain conflates songs in weird way, like lyrics of one song end up in another song?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So my favorite example of that I have that I deal with as a Minnesotan is Little Red Corvette, the kind you find in a secondhand store.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. No, I know, but that's what happens in my head a lot of the time. For this one, it's at the end. For this song, it's at the end of the chorus, and it goes like this: shine a light, bake that cake.
I can't tell if you've just ruined or enhanced the song for me. And
I've certainly made cake to bake better.
I mean, it's basically an ad for Easy Bake Oven at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I mean,
let us know which songs you conflate that way. And as well as what you think about Be Here Now and what other songs we should talk about in frightening detail.
Yeah, if you have any sort of inside stories about a classic Eurovision song, let us know. Like, we'd love to hear from you guys. Again, 12pointsofamerica@gmail.com. Find us on socials basically anywhere. If you are listening to us in the podcast medium that allows you to leave comments, feel free to do that too. It all helps. So... any other pearls of wisdom that we wish to share with each other before we say goodnight for the evening? Well, okay, then, fine. Be that way. See you.
I mean, I can keep talking, but I don't. You probably don't want me to at this point.
No, we don't mind.
I'm not sure that my throat wants me to at this point.
Yeah, it sounds like you're having a good time.
Yeah.
Well, on that dulcet tone, everybody, we'll see you next time. And until then, I've been Samantha.
I've been Derek.
I've been Eric.
And I've been Liz.
And America.
Stop listening.
Now.